Blog Talk Radio.
My brothers and sisters, we have missed the last 2 weeks of our program, the first time due to our own or my inefficiency on the computer, the second time, the second date, which was last week, due to the problems of the network, problems beyond my control. But this evening is on Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, October 8th, is Help Recall Lynn Stewart's Legacy. Call in if you have a memory of Lynn Stewart. I could speak to you for this whole hour of my memories of Lynn Stewart, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to say that so many things are connected on October 8th. I understand it was the death of Che Guevara, but if we look at the people of goodwill, people willing to fight for justice, we can find all kinds of connections. But, and let me get on with the program. October 8th, Ralph Pointer, What I Believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds, as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. Now, last week's program was to be dedicated to Tommy Manning, one of the Ohio Seven who died in the death camp after outrageous medical, I can't call it treatment, medical encounters. And if we believe that we are going to have freedom, there are going to be many more political prisoners. And this is one of the reasons why this program is dedicated to political prisoners. And freedom was never given. And we just returned from New Orleans, Louisiana. And you would not believe this. This is very difficult to believe. The issue was the 13th Amendment and the people incarcerated in the Angola prison. It's a slave camp. And the lynching, the issue of lynching that Ida B. Wells tried to get before the federal government in the 1920s and 30s, they're still lynching successful black men. And the case of Mr. Victor, I hope somebody calls in to talk about Mr. Victor, because that's going to be ongoing. A young, successful millionaire who worked and had success and was building up the black community in La Paz, Louisiana, and they just lynched him. The courts, the media, they did a job on him, put him in jail for life and his wife in jail. It's another story, and we don't have time to go into it this evening unless someone calls in on the program, and we do have a real situation in New York City where BAI was taken over for a bit, and it's going to be a struggle. I'm sure there's a meeting tonight. I know there's a meeting tonight to deal with that, and we want to bring the issue of BAI to our listeners because BAI needs our help. And BAI stepped up for many of our political prisoners. They certainly stepped up. Ralph Shulman taking aim, Mimi Rosenberg and others who take on issues and speak truth to power, speak to support our political prisoners. So much support for Momia. We have to go to the aid of BAI. And if you're not involved in the struggle of BAI, get involved. And so, without further ado, because I could keep you here all night, I'm going to say a word or two about my memory of Lynn. But I think first we're going to, talking about Lynn and the poets, we're going to go to Professor Louie, who's going to give us another one of his gems that we have so often looked forward to having. Professor Louie, your mic is open.
All right. Money, 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 right from the start. Money in the brain, money in the heart. Money, money, money. I hear people say they want more money every day. Well, it's the root of all evil. That might be true, but I know you're glad you got some money on you. I'm not mad. I'm not sad. I'm kind of glad I got some, too. So we beg, borrow, and steal. Well, what's the big deal? It's only paper, and that's for real. What's so hot? Who cares if you got it? It's just a little piece of paper in your pocket. Now, you might say something really old. Get on up here big and bold. It's only paper, but it stands for gold. You could say it quite. You could scream and holler. There's no more gold behind the dollar. Back in the day, 1973, right on out there for you and me and everyone to see, the United States went off the gold standard. Unwind your mind, you can understand it. No box, no locks, don't drop your socks. There's no more gold down in Fort Knox, and we will see the bill sooner or later, what you got in your pocket is a piece of paper. And on that paper, we write checks, get stocks, bonds, whatever's next, options, futures, credit card, all based on something we ain't got, hedge fund, derivative, all paper and plastic. Something's got to give, because it's not an act. It's a fact, my friend. All paper money comes to a bad end. That's an old, old rule. It won't break or bend. All paper money comes to a bad end. And you could say that's a terrible mess. The U.S. government might never confess, but every freaking day your money's worth less. Put it in the bank or put it in your pocket. Your money's worth less than the day you got it. And when that dollar takes a big fall, the billionaire don't worry at all. He got 10, 11 brokers out in the hall. And when U.S. dollars are going down, he checks out the other money going round. Before your little breakfast hits your little tummy, he trades his dollars for German money or Chinese, whatever money's good, and leave you broke back in the neighborhood where you pay $4 for a loaf of bread and the landlord wants thousands just to lay your head. So it's only paper, but we never refuse it. First and last, we got to ask, why do we use it? Now, you could get up and make some noise, but nobody ever asked for your voice. We use dollars because we got no choice. Down here in the land of milk and honey, what is it that stands behind the money? For your mama, papa, daughter, or son, for every single body under the sun, what makes the system run? It's cops and billy clubs, soldiers and guns. No one never ever asked for your voice. We use dollars because we got no choice. All over the world, power comes from the money system and the barrel of guns. And you could say, I want my money back, but you're hooked like crack. And here's the fact. No one ever asked you, Jack, because money is a tool for who's going to rule over the wise man and the fool. And there's some things that money brings. A little song that money sings. It's never about what people need. It's all about power and greed. Check out the whole world, east to west. It's about some get more and some get less. Look up in front, look back behind. Check your history book down through time. Money is something to keep you in line. And does that got to make you mad or sad? If it's only paper, what makes it bad? Hey, it's what we do to get it, what we do when we got it. Did we think about it? Maybe we forgot it. How do you make our money? How do we spend it, Sonny? How you get, how you spend, how do you live? In the end, did you take or give? Because at the risk of getting kind of sappy, money don't seem to make people happy. Look up in the mansion, look down in the dump. How happy really is Donald Trump? Rich people want more and more, day and night. Why so much more if you feel all right? So money's not everything. That might sound corny, but you can't make love with it when you get horny. It's bold, it's cold, but an old story has been told. What good's money if you lose your soul? Straight up, Jack, not whack like crack. You could sell your soul, but you can't buy it back. And if you do not worship money, sure as you're born, the soul you save might be your own. So the money's funny, the change is strange. There's a whole world to rearrange. And before this song gets too long, whatever you think is right or wrong, before the bell's gonna ring, before the fat lady gets to sing, we feel better when we do the right thing. And there is something that we know. We're gonna reap just what we sow. You're broke and hungry or a big man in town. What goes around will come around. And far and near, it might be queer, but money's still here and the road is clear. Throw everyone in the whole world right down the middle. No one with too much, no one with too little. Treat your neighbors just like yourself. Same money for them, you and me, and for everybody else. Forget the rich and forget the poor. Close up the bank and open up your door. It's money, 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 right from the start. Money in the brain, money in the heart. Money, 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 I hear people say. They want more money every day.
Welcome back, Professor Louie. I know the spirit, the soul, the energy of Lynn Stewart is smiling because she says he says it like nothing else. They say it in their own way. And if you have any heart at all, you understand that because here we are at DAI having a struggle. What's the struggle? Money. Because we do not have the money. And this, I could go on and on. I know those of you listening, this poem is available, and this program is archived. Listen to it again and again. Thank you, Professor Louie. And next up, we're going to go to Sister Gwen Goodwin. Gwen, your mic is open.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I didn't expect to be so soon. Hi, everybody.
Hey, okay. How you doing, Gwen?
I'm okay. I'm sorry, there's a little feedback from me. Okay, but I'm here now. And let's see. I'm going to go to my regular phone because this is deep. Hello?
Okay, we're here.
Okay. I guess tonight, you know, the topic is Lynn, and the topic is WBAI. Lynn, I never knew personally, but I knew of Lynn because of WBAI. And because of BAI, I got to see her just before they took her out to prison. And I was dumbstruck by her elegance, her eloquence. And the idea that she had such positivity, even though she was going into a place that must have been so frightening. So there are people in this world that are just really above the fray, and they're so brave and so prophetic. And I remember seeing her the night they were taking her out in this little gray frock, and she was this little woman, very plain, and she came out and she said, "Tonight I'm going to be with my sisters, and I'm going to take this message to the prison with me, and the struggle goes on." And I was so moved by this because I think any person, any other person would have been so angry at the terrible blow that she had been dealt, of the injustice that she was going to incur, and taking her unhealthy body with her to prison, not knowing whether anyone was going to do anything. So I was truly, truly moved by Lynn. And then later on, as you know, Ralph, I got to meet you, and you have been a mentor to me. And you have given me bravery when I was afraid to go through the door. You kind of pushed me in, and I found my footing, and I knew I was at the right place. So you are a power couple, and Lynn was as pretty close to a saint as we're going to get on this planet. And as far as WBAI, I am really heartbroken about BAI, and I think we all need to look into ourselves and ask ourselves, are we willing to save the station, or are we only willing to sit on our righteousness and say that our way is the only way that it could be? I noticed when I was running for the to be on the station board that there was a lot of unwillingness to move at all, either way. There was an unwillingness to consider ideas that, you know, maybe weren't perfect, but could have taken us to a place that we needed to go. Clearly, the radio station has to have money. There was only one other idea on the table other than just standing still, and that was to try to move it over to the TV station Manhattan Neighborhood Network. Was it perfect, the plan? Maybe it wasn't. Probably not. But it would have stabilized us, and it would have given us some time to get this bill paid down. So unless there's some billionaire that's going to step up to the plate, I'm very sad to see where we ended up. But I think what we can take away from BAI, if they can't save BAI, is that until we learn to work together, even people that call themselves left wing or progressives, I saw the same nastiness and backbiting there that I see when I'm with, you know, conservative people. I didn't see a lot of what we claim to be on the side of, and that was goodness and openness. I didn't see too much of that when I was working behind the scenes. And I think that it's something we need to practice what we preach. So we need to raise that money if we can, but we need to also learn to work together. A lot of people don't like Gary Null, and I always say, you know, You're not going to like people 100%. But there are people, everybody has something good about them. And one of the things I heard today when I was listening to him was that he made an offer to help. And, you know, BAI didn't even call him back. And they just, you know, they need the help. We need all help from all people right now. And I don't think we're in a position to be staying in a place where we can just say, you know, I don't really like your point of view, so I'm not going to listen. He has already opened his own radio network. A lot of the programs are really high quality. They're very progressive. He knows how to raise money. And he certainly has organization skills that are clearly lacking at the station. I'm not saying he's the magic bullet. And I'm not saying that going to Manhattan Neighborhood Network was also the magic bullet. But there are solutions if we work together instead of tearing each other apart and putting each other down and just acting like it's my way or the highway. So I hope that we'll embrace each other, our differences, and we will try to move on from this. And that's what I have to share tonight.
Thank you so much for that, Gwen. And we're going to go next to continue talking about WBAI. And the number is 4702. Your mic is open. King, 4702. Your mic is open.
Hi, sorry, but unfortunately I had myself muted, so I was talking away and you couldn't hear it. So thanks for doing the program, Brother Ralph. It's King Downing.
Gotcha. Talk to us, King. Talk to us.
Okay. Okay, well, where do we begin? Yesterday morning, Michael G. Haskins, who is the engineer and also the host and producer of the show Living for the City, and I, who are a local station board member and also a co-host of Waking Up with Juliana Furlano and King Downing, Michael and I had decided to collaborate during the fundraiser on a special on the history of the Cherokee Nation and what they were forced to do, and focusing on a film about that, but also focusing on a film about, which is very interesting, kind of like a domination of Europe over peoples of color in the Western Hemisphere. So it was all very appropriate when I approached the station and was told that the elevator was locked because there was something going on up there with officials, and I thought, oh, the cops are here. So I ran back out the door of the cafe and through our regular entrance and ran up the stairs and wondered why I didn't see any police cars outside. But when I got to the door, I was met by two security guards who stopped me just as I got inside the door. And a person whose last name I forget, named Adrian, who said she was the national HR director for Pacifica, tried to tell me in a very polite voice that the station had been shut down, that I was not allowed in, and I needed to leave. So I mentioned that I was a local station board member, and by what authority was this being done? And she said, I don't really have the answers, but you can't be here. So I started to speak a little louder and a little stronger. And then John Vanille, the executive director, came up and then tried to explain that we're shutting down the station. And I said, for what reason? Well, there are some financial issues. We know there have been, but there was never anything that got to the point where the station had to be shut down. So when he said that this was being done for financial reasons, I said, so you mean to tell me that we're in the middle of a fundraiser and you're going to shut down the station and pipe in some alternative programming because of financial situations, yet you're going to cut our fundraising off? That doesn't make any sense. So when I asked him by what authority this was done, because we know that any action that's taken by the interim executive director has to be done under the authority of the Pacifica National Board, we know well. And I asked him by what authority this was done, and he said to me that the board knows about it. And I said, well, what do you mean the board, the National Board knows about it? He said they were all informed, and I asked him to give me that document. He said he would email it to me immediately. At that point, they were trying to get me to leave again. And they said only people who were producers and had property here, because my being a local station board member meant nothing to them. So I said, well, I have important information here. I have confidential sources. I need to remove this information from the computers. They cannot be shared. with you all or anyone else. And through that, I managed to buy some time, caught up with Michael, got more about what was going on, realized that Michael and I were the only ones in the station at that time, and there was nobody at that hour from our management. And so I was just determined to do what I had to do, slowly get my information off the computers and then be in eyes and ears until management came, which was sometime after 11, when Andrea Katz was the first one to show up, and then later Linda Perry. And I didn't know where how far they were going to take it, but I made it clear that I was going to continue to do what I needed to do, trying to buy time until management got there. So at that point, more and more people started to show up outside, and we started the caucus and started the meeting planning, and that culminated in, I heard you speaking earlier, in the emergency meeting tonight, which I also attended.
Well, thank you so much for that. And as I said, we are going to stay on this, and I encourage all of those who can hear this, tell your friends this is going to be a long struggle. We must all be in it to win it. Thank you so much for that, King. And we'll go next to Ann Lamb, who is going to give us what this station is all about, political prisoners, and remembering that BAI has always been a help for political prisoners. Ann, your mic is open.
Well, that is certainly true, Ralph. You know, we have our show, Where We Live, which was started by Safia Bukhari. And is now being done by Sally O'Brien and Sister Dekwi Kioni Siddiqui and Sister Pam Hanna. And that's on Thursday night, so obviously we will not be hearing that this Thursday. It's totally dedicated to political prisoners. Been on the air for a long time. And it's a big loss to lose BAI because, you know, we do have our own independent media that would report to us on things that we would otherwise not know about. And, of course, they were always supportive of our political prisoners and have been always and will continue to be, I hope, in the future. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to work this out. As, you know, the sister was saying before, people need to work together. It can't be just my way or the highway. There were things that could have been done that we were trying to get done that didn't happen. You know, for whatever reason, I was sort of on the periphery of all that. I didn't want to get sucked into the maelstrom of some things that I heard from friends that were very hurtful. That was said over the years, you know, in these ongoing fights. But our political prisoners, we have some updates. Jaleel was supposed to go to the board today, but because the JFA people are distributing tablets, he'll be going to the board tomorrow. So that's one thing that's happened. The Virgin Islands three, who are currently in a county jail somewhere in Florida, they had a visit from people from the Virgin Islands because they were checking out the conditions of this jail because they can only have one visit a week. It's only for 2 hours, right? They have minimal access to the phone. So, you know, it's not like the kind of conditions they're supposed to be in. So I don't know if that's going to make a difference. We're waiting for a report from them to see, you know, what it was all about, how did the meeting go, so on and so forth. And meanwhile, they have all their paperwork in, and they believe they will be going to the parole board in December. Now, whether or not that will do anything, you know, remains to be seen. So, you know, as soon as we get a date and who we should write to, we'll be writing letters in support. We'll put that out there, whether you know the brothers or not. They've, you know, more than done their time. When they were in the Virgin Islands, they were allowed out on the street. One of the brothers went out to go to the masjid. They totally forgot about him. You know, he went back to the prison on his own. You know, here I am. You know, he never did come to pick me up, that kind of thing. So, you know, obviously they're not any danger to their community or anything else. And they're elders, and they're not well. That's one thing that's going on. We still haven't heard any news on Dell. You know, the board apparently has not decided anything yet on Dell Africa. So that's still pending. Where Leonard is in Coleman seems to be on some kind of permanent lockdown. There was an incident months ago where a white prisoner attacked a black prisoner, and then black prisoners retaliated by attacking a white prisoner. You know, it was this Aryan Nation thing. And they locked down the entire complex, which is huge. It's 5 prisons. And the guards have said this lockdown is not going to be lifted. We're doing weekly sweeps of everybody's cells. And until the place is, quote-unquote, clean, we don't find anything, the lockdown will remain. So, you know, the chances of that happening quickly are minimal, shall we say. So that looks like it's going to be almost permanent, making it very difficult to get in to see Leonard and, of course, any other person who happens to be in Coleman, Florida, right? So, you know, there is that. I know there was a very negative decision around the runs of hours. I haven't had a chance yet to actually read that decision. So I have to go look for it again and take a read and see what that is all about. We're still waiting to hear on Sundiata after the excellent hearing if there's going to be any movement there. You know, Sundiata Coley, who has been down, you know, since forever and is in his 80s. So, you know, that would be interesting to see and hear about. We were talking about Ed Poindexter and trying to do a campaign of some kind around the fact that there's been some new evidence that has been unearthed. Apparently, there was a young woman who was a witness at the trial who actually provided an alibi for Armando and Ed because they were with her in some amusement park on the day that they were supposedly handing over this suitcase with the bomb in it to this kid, right? And nobody seemed to realize it at the time, interestingly enough. It was one of these things. The lawyer didn't pick up on it, their lawyer. It was never mentioned in any of their appeals. The woman herself, who was very young at the time, you know, Michael Richardson, went and talked to her. And she was like, you know, I had no idea that I had provided an alibi because it had never been picked up on. So this is a way to try to get some kind of, you know, relief for poor Ed, who's been in prison for 49 years and is totally innocent. That was a classic COINTELPRO case. And they were, you know, basically framed. And, they, you know, Mondo died because, you know, he died inside because he said, if you're going to go for compassionate release from me, I in no way, shape, or form, I'm going to say now that I'm guilty of a crime that I did not commit in order to die outside. And that's one of the reasons he did die inside. Because he refused that part. He did not want it on any paperwork, and he refused to sign any paperwork where that was said, you know, that, you know, you were guilty of this crime. So, you know, if we could do something for Ed in terms of that, similar to, you know, now we found this new evidence in Lumia's case. It's a 47-page brief. I would encourage people to read it. Go to freemomia.com and see what's happening with that, because this is giving the opening, you know, for a new trial. There's been all kinds of brouhaha. You know, Maureen, whatever her new last name is, the wife of Faulkner, the widow, you know, she's been up in arms about it. The FOP is pissed off at Krasner for actually turning this evidence in. I mean, he did the right thing. He didn't go and hide it somewhere. He didn't disappear it. Well, which he could have done, right? And probably which they wished he had done. And so there is some evidence in these boxes. There's a letter from this taxi driver, Chaubert, who testified against Mumia in the original trial. And he's asking the DA, where's my money? Where is my money? Straight up. Handwritten letter, you know, where's my money? So obviously he got paid to, you know, say what he said. So that's one, that's only one of the things that they found. You know, there's other things as well. But just that in itself is pretty glaring. You're like, oh, right, this, we knew this all along, right? Here it is coming to light after all these years that Lemieux has been in prison, spent 30 years on death row, in solitary confinement, not able to touch another living being. You know, I mean, that is extremely, extremely cruel. Now, I know people know that Maroon, Russell Maroon Schultz is receiving some kind of chemo inside Pennsylvania docks, you know, for his cancer. His family had reported that so far it seemed to be going okay. They have don't have too many details as to what specific kind of chemo it is, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, they've been talking with their dad, and he says, you know, things are going well. People can go to jerichoandy.org. We have a little thing up right on the front page. There is a fundraiser going on to raise some money for Maroon so his family can come to see him, because, of course, they moved him further away from Philadelphia. Now it's a six-hour trip each way, so he's far away. He's very close to Pittsburgh, actually. So he's somewhere in southwest PA. And let's see, who else has been having interesting stuff going on? Well, you know, you said you're going to dedicate this to Tom as well as to Lynn. We did have a beautiful memorial for Tom. I know you were there, Ralph and Betty. It was really, really nice. It was very well attended. We had nice, you know, arrangement of people, because we had younger people and older people. We had people of all colors. The families were there. You know, his family was there, and all of the families of the Ohio 7 were there as well. So it was really nice. You know, a lot of people we haven't seen in a long time. It was very moving. Ray Luke spoke really beautifully. Paulette has talked with some Irish folk. So some of Tom's ashes are going to go to Ireland, and they are going to plant a tree in whatever part of Ireland that Tom's family is originally from, his ancestral roots. And when Ray was speaking, he said he was going to scatter some of his ashes in these streams that go into the ocean in Maine. And he was saying that, you know, he would imagine that some of these ashes would eventually find their way over to the shores of Ireland. So this is very very poetic and nice. And then we found out about the trees. So, you know, it really went together beautifully. And, you know, it was really, really well done and, you know, very well attended. And, you know, I think it was a really, you know, nice thing. And we were talking on Sunday night in our conference call, and Kazi said, no more memorials. And I said, I can hear you for that. We don't want to be doing this. This is the last thing we want to be doing, you know.
Right on, Ann. It was wonderful.
Brothers and sisters. Yeah, you were there. It was beautiful, right? And,
yes.
You know, but this is not what we want to be doing. We want to be getting our brothers and sisters out here with us, you know. And a lot of them have done some real long, hard, hard time. And so, you know, when you say, oh, Sindiot is like 82, well, he's in prison, so that's more like him being 92, at least. You know, it adds years, takes years away from your life, and adds years to you. So if you're somebody who's 65 out here, if you were in prison, you would be more like 75, maybe 80, because of, you know, the bad diet, the bad medical, you know, et cetera, you know, the deprivation and all kinds of stuff. So
yes, we
know. You know, really,
we know, Ann. Thank you for the work you've done, and that's why we call them, I call them death camps. They are death camps for our political prisoners. It was a wonderful event for Tommy Manning, and you mentioned Mungo Waelanga and his poetry. It's just super. Look at his little pamphlet. He put out a book, and if you could buy that and find that, you would find great poetry. Great meaning, and he spoke on the program a while back of his innocence. And so, without further ado, we're going next to 1-885. Your mic is open. I'm looking for it. You were here. 1-885. Your mic is open. Hello?
Sister Shirley,
your mic is open. All right, let us go.
I'm here. Sorry about that.
Quite all right. Give us words this evening.
Listening to all what's being said, and so much. And I was truly blessed with the ability to meet Lynn. And
you're going to have to speak to the mic. We're not hearing you.
Oh, I don't know why.
Go ahead.
Do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I said I was so absorbed in hearing what was being said that I got away from me, and I was very blessed to have met Lynn, and she made a tremendous impression on my life, and I just pray and hope that we all continue to do and be like she was, because we really do need it in this system, and we need to truly work together, because that's the problem. And like the sister Gwen was saying, it is true that, you know, the system sucks so bad, but with even in this movement, there are people who don't seem like they're part of this movement. They're just out there for themselves and making a name for themselves. Like Sharpton, I call him Sharpass. You know, it's about, you know, don't worry about it. This is mine. I got this. Instead of us working together, and it is truly sad that WBAI is gone. But you know what? Where there's a will, there's a way. And
was the struggle has gotten very hot when it was taken over, and now the judge ruled that restraining order, and so it's back. And but it's not over. The struggle has just begun in earnest, and we're just getting into it. We're never going to let that go. And I'm glad people are saying maybe this time. It's been a shot across the bow that will make people work together. And I think that's what you were saying. And with that said, we're going to have to move on to, and thank you for that, Sister Shirley. We're going to have to move on to 4453. Your mic is open. 4453.
Hi, this is Gil Obler from the Free Mumia Coalition and Uhura Solidarity Movement, Green Party. I met Lynn in 2008. I was working for Cynthia McKinney when she ran for president, and I came back from the conference in Philadelphia where I was given direction on organizing in New York with Colia Clark and others. We did put together Cynthia McKinney's campaign for president in New York State, and three of the people who showed up immediately to do that were Ralph Pointer, Betty Davis, and Lynn Stewart. And they were always there every time we had a meeting, every time we had a crisis, they were always there. And it was at that same meeting that that I met Pam Africa and started my work on Mumia's case and with political prisoners. Again, Ralph, Betty, and Lynn were always there for Mumia and for all the other political prisoners. I then ended up getting involved in the struggle for BAI. I ran for the board. On a ticket with Lynn at the top of the ticket, Lynn Stewart at the top of the ticket, and we continued to work together over the years. Obviously, when she was put in jail unjustly, I worked with Ralph and Betty to get her out, and we were successful in that, just as we've been recently successful in getting five members of the MOVE family, the MOVE 9, out. So these struggles can be won. As Ralph said, the struggle for BAI is just beginning. The struggle for the Uhuru movement for the liberation of colonized people, in particular the African working class, you know, is just beginning, although it's been going on for 600 years. So we just have to keep working on these things. We have to work together, as has been said, because apart we can't win. I guess I'm just going to mention tomorrow at the Brownsville Heritage House at 581 Mother Gaston Boulevard in Brooklyn. The INPEDM is putting a program together called Uhura Means Freedom, the Black Power Blueprint. It's going to be between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. again at the Brownsville Heritage House at 581 Mother Gaston Boulevard, which is near the Julius, I think it's called, subway stop.
I'm not sure, Gil. Hello? No, go back.
That's it, though. That's all I had to say. One other thing about Lynn. In addition to her serious side, she saw me the winter before she died. I'd like to wear this hat it's a children's hat with a bat and a little squeeze ball, which would make the wings flap. And she just loved that so much that I ended up giving her that. And she was, the smile on her face, she was just so happy when she had that hat. And that's one of the things I'll always remember about Lynn.
Well, thank you so much for that, Gil. And we must remember Lynn did, along with her serious side, she had a side of her that I always marveled at. She could tell you the truth, even though it was a truth that you didn't like. There were so many people who were on the other side who couldn't help themselves. They just had to like Lynn. And I remember Lynn in the prison. I believe she broke every regulation they had, and she was penalized for it. But her regulations were broken for justice. When they told her that she could not help the other prisoners with their legal work, she reminded them that she was a lawyer, and she had committed no crime, and it would be a crime for her to be in the death camps. And she made a statement that still sticks with me today, and it is 40% of the women in prison, in this federal prison, would have been free with 1 hour of good work by lawyers. 1 hour of good work. She said there was so much that was so outrageous that had gone on to get people in the death camps. And she says she was ashamed of her profession. The staggering inequities that the lawyers could have prevented, except she felt the lawyers were racist and classist that did not give decent representation to these women. And so she took it on. And she lost her phone privileges. She lost her commissary. She lost her visiting privileges. And then one day after losing that, she called me and she said, they called her into the office and said, you're incorrigible. You're going to continue helping women with their legal papers and we're not going to sanction you anymore. But keep it on the down low. And when you need something, go to the office and they'll give you calls and commissary because they recognize the good and the decency that she was. Now, not all of the guards who could apply for Auschwitz. Most of them could, but those who recognize her persistence in helping the people inside the prison, the death camps, gave in. And there's so many stories I would like to tell, but we're going to go to the next caller. Would you go to the next number? What is it? 543. I think we've had you. 4453. Your microphone is open.
No, you already did me. That was Gil.
Oh, sorry. Take one to the next. Six, five, seven, four. Your mic is open. Six, five, seven, four. Your mic is open. All right, I'm going to go to my memory of Lynn Stewart. And it was, I believe, 2002 in Minneapolis at the Lawyers Guild. Lynn Stewart gave a speech. And it was printed by the Lawyers Guild. And it becomes my credo. And when she was alive in the evening, when I wanted Lynn to read it to me, I would ask her to read it, and I never recorded it while she was reading. And I'm going to give you a part of it right now, just a few minutes of it. And it goes like this. For we have formidable enemies, not unlike those in the tales of ancient days. There is a consummate evil that unleashes its dogs of war on the helpless, an enemy motivated only by insatiable greed. The enemy will destroy the air we breathe and the water we drink as long as the dollars keep filling up their money boxes. Well, that is the end. That is just a small piece of what she said. And as I would listen to her in the evening, and when I could finally get her to read it to me, it's all I could do. When I got that far, I would say stop, because I was in tears, because it was so prophetic. It was so profound. And with time, I do believe I have time. There are those callers who want to call in and talk about Lynn Stewart and to talk about BAI, but I'm going to read that message that Lynn, that final message that Lynn, not final, the message that she gave to us so many years ago, if I can find it. I have found it, and here it is. National Lawyers Guild Convention and Cry Justice, a convention of activists and organizers in Minneapolis, Minnesota, October 26, 2003. In an earlier part of my life, I worked as a children's librarian in Harlem. I was a storyteller. I still am happiest gathering the children, now grandchildren, together right before bed to read and tell stories. So powerful are these ancient tales from all the cultures of the world that one by one the adults would drift into, or open the porch door, or turn down the radio to hear better. And thinking about what to say to you this morning as the closing words of this marvelous event, I am reminded of the ancient nature of what we came for, what we accomplished, and where we are going. For we are a gathering of warriors of our day, those people who were placed on this earth at this time to change it. We were summoned here because tradition, ancient and modern, affirmed the strength doubled and tripled into infinity by the collective will. And we saw that it truly works. We warriors came here to listen to each other, to enjoy each other, to exchange ideas, to remember battles of old, to plan. We also came here and we sang and we laughed a lot and we played poker and we watched the games of autumn, next year Mets, and we hugged and hugged some more. We supped and dined and drank and toasted our heroes and derided, chided, hissed and booed our enemies. We learned. We have been inspired once again by the almost mystical and marvelous ability to gather strength through camaraderie, intellectual jousting, and exchange, but mostly by sharing the collective will to change the world. Today, some of us depart from this Twin City. Other warriors remain, but all on Monday will be transformed back to lawyers, activists, legal workers, students, and organizers. We leave here with quests now to be fulfilled on far-flung battlefields. I use these terms in the ancient and metaphoric sense, and I hope not offensive to peace activists. For we have formidable enemies, not unlike those in the tales of ancient days. There is a consummate evil that unleashes its dogs of war on the helpless, an enemy motivated only by insatiable greed. The miller's daughter made to spin gold, the fisherman's wife, Midas, all with no thought of consequences. In this enemy, there is no love of the land or the creatures that live there, no compassion for the people. This enemy will destroy the air we breathe and the water we drink as long as the dollars keep filling up their money boxes. We now resume our everyday lives, but we have been charged once again with and for our quest. And like Hippolyta and her Amazons, like David going forth to meet Goliath, like Beowulf the Dragon Slayer, like Queen Zenobia who made war on the Romans, like Sir Galahad seeking the Holy Grail, and modern heroes, dare I mention, Ho and Mao and Lenin, Fidel and Nelson Mandela, and John Brown, Che Guevara who reminds us, at the risk of seeming ridiculous, Let me say that the true revolutionary is guided by a great feeling of love. Our quests, like theirs, are to shake the very foundations of the continents. We go out to stop police brutality, to rescue the imprisoned, to change the rules for those who have never, ever been able to get to the starting line, much less run the race because of color, physical condition, gender, mental impairment. We go forth to preserve the air, the land, and the water, and the sky, all the beasts that crawl and fly. We go forth to safeguard the right to speak and write, to join, to learn, to rest safe at home, to be secure, fed, healthy, sheltered, loved, and loving, to be at peace with one's identity. Until we meet again, our quests are formidable. We have in Washington a poisonous government that spreads its venom to the body politic in all corners of the globe. We have war, big war in Iraq, big war in Afghanistan, smaller wars in Colombia, Central Africa, Southeast Asia. We have detainees and political prisoners at home. And now looming in 2004, we have those Democratic and Republican conventions. And then an election with the corporate media ready to hype the results and drown out the righteous protest. But there are, in all the towns and cities we return to, the people, our people, the day-in and day-out grassroots organizers, and they are busy coalition building, carrying out protests and actions against powers so vast and evil that our collective will must be to defend the people in this vanguard to enable them to recruit and prepare fresh troops. And there are also individual quests. I hope and believe that I will be in Birmingham next year, that our movement, our righteous movement, will defend me, and that our victory for the people, of the people, and by the people will restore the defenders, and this one in particular, to the front lines of the battle. So the long year 2004 stretches out until we meet again. We have no crystal ball, but we have history, and that history teaches us. As we go forth, we learn from all those who have struggled before us. A fellow traveler of an earlier time, a communist and a Jew, Bertolt Brecht wrote as his last poem what has become my credo, and I give it to you. And I always thought, that the very simplest words must be enough. When I say what things are like, everyone's heart must be torn to shreds. That you'll go down if you don't stand up for yourself. Surely you see that. Go forth and do justice. And my brothers and sisters, that must be the first time I was able to go through this speech, because it does tear my heart to shreds. And I see the moment when she was in Minneapolis, and before she spoke, there were dancers of Mayan ancestry who did a dance for the elders in the movement, in full costume of the Mayans. It was unbelievable. And the elder Lynch Stewart stepped forward and spoke these words. And to this day, it is so prophetic. It could have been
90 seconds.
It could have been today, for it projects the future that we must deal with. It projects the hope and the knowledge that we will win when we struggle. It says thanks when she says, "I hope I will be restored to you to be on the front lines." Well, with the help of you, there
60 seconds
on the program, you brought Lynn home. This was her desire, and what we are trying to do on this program is continue her work, free political prisoners. As Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. says, what's the call? Free them all. As the people in the MOVE organization say, let me hear it, the people in the MOVE organization. And so we all know what our call is in all of these organizations. On the MOVE, and as Lynn Stewart said to me, do not miss one meeting
10 seconds
of me. The struggle continues. And I'm sure you will continue the struggle with.
That every